it sounds like we are here now. Now we're here. Okay, welcome everybody. That song always gets me cranked up. a little bit premature announcement there. This is Chuck Horton coming to you live on Double Cross Radio on the UCY network. And I'm joined tonight with my co-host Drew Lamb and Colby Olson. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's
it going? Hey, guys, what's going on?
And we have a special guest tonight. Sam Price is going to be talking to us about Bitcoin, which I know that all you guys want to know more about.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Sam has been in Bitcoin for quite a while, and he's going to if you've already heard him, he was here almost exactly a year ago. It was 364 days ago. So, anyway, he's going to we're going to start out by just giving a real brief explanation of how Bitcoins are created, so that you, in case all of you weren't listening a year ago, and then we're going to go into talking about why we think Bitcoin is important and some of the things that are happening, the new things, new developments that are happening that I think they're very important. I think a lot of people are going to want to know this stuff. So let's start out. Sam, let's have you just give them just kind of a real brief overview of how the Bitcoin platform started.
All right, well, sure, yeah. Bitcoin was developed, as far as everybody knows, by an anonymous developer about 5 years ago. He published a white paper in early 2009, and along with the white paper, he included some code, and that code was kind of a foundation, as a framework for how the Bitcoin network would work. A lot of parts of it were not fully implemented yet, but it was published open source and taken over by hundreds of developers. Initially, just a small pool of developers, but now it's ballooned up to hundreds or even thousands of developers around the world, and they all just contribute to making the software network work as intended. And there's a lot of technical details going into, of course, how it works, but essentially it has become, I'd say, the world's most technologically advanced payment network, and there's so much more to it too. It's really just a great platform where the first major technology that I think we're going to see come out of it is the use of payments, as a currency or whatever people want to call it. It's alive and kicking. Just a year ago, we covered, I think, more details about the technology underneath it. I think today we're going to talk more about the utility of why it's useful, what gives it value.
And people that are interested in that can go back to the show we had back then, and we covered it pretty thoroughly. And there's other people on the online internet and YouTube channels that have good descriptions of this too. It's just there's other places you can get this information. We wanted to talk about things that we think are a little more current, but we want to just give you kind of that basic understanding that this is, a lot of people say that something's going to be the next big thing. Well, Bitcoin is the next big thing. It's really big. I don't think we've even come close to visualizing even 5% of what's possible with Bitcoin.
Right.
It's just extraordinary what's going to happen with this.
Yeah, it's a technological platform just like the internet was, and the first thing as it was originally designed, he gave it. It was called coin, and it was a means to transfer money. But the original design of it allows for so much more than just a transfer of or a bit of value, and it was very much rooted in. I think what you and I talked about last time, what we've talked about a lot before, in kind of the Austrian economics idea that money supply needs to be limited, and that there should be no central bank pulling the levers of money creation and that sort of thing. So Bitcoin's unique in that money is created essentially is a race between, you know, there's what's known as Bitcoin mining, and I think a lot of people have heard of Bitcoin mining associated with Bitcoin, although they probably don't understand exactly what it means, but essentially it's just a race where you have computer hardware that, you know, everybody in the world who is Bitcoin mining is in a race to solve what's known as a block that adds to the blockchain. And the value in that is it creates a distributed network of trust where cryptography creates a form of trust that, you know, only people who legitimately own bitcoins can actually spend those coins, but it creates this trust without any central gatekeeper being that bastion of trust. You know, instead, this algorithm creates a decentralized platform for trust.
And this is really, this is where its real strength comes in. When Mt. Gox failed, everybody said, "Oh, Bitcoin's over. It's done. It's history. It's toast."
Right, but it rebounded immediately.
But it was so diversified that the biggest exchange could go down in flames, and it just keeps going.
Right, right. And it, you know, it took a little hit for maybe a week in terms of its value, but you know, everybody who supported it kept supporting it, and, you know, in fact, it just immediately rebounded in value, and news came out faster than ever that there is a big move in software development all over in terms of integrating the Bitcoin platform into, you know, a number of roles.
Yeah. Now,
so I'm going to guess. Can I interject for a second?
Sure.
I had a question. I mean, I used to be involved like 17 to, you know, 15 years ago in some DDoS things that, you know, in that time frame would have been known as illegal. But
like the DDoS, like a denial of service attacks, right? Like where
denial of service attacks, bludgeon. It's an old program that used to be around.
Sure.
I mean, things like that. Windows bombers, you know, things that would do damage through chat rooms and shit. But how much different are the algorithms from things like Java and DDoS that most of those people don't actually understand?
Well, you know, Java is just a language for developing software, and then, you know, DDoS is a specific means of attacking a particular computer. It's on the internet, you know, because there's only so much data that can be sent through the internet at any given time. A denial of service attack essentially blocks a particular computer from communicating with the rest of the internet. Now, because of Bitcoin's decentralized nature, because there's not just one place to attack, it's actually really impossible to do a DDoS attack on the Bitcoin network. You can attack specific Bitcoin nodes, but you're only going to be, you know, making it an inconvenience for those nodes while they're being attacked. The rest of the network is essentially immune because it's not possible to do a concentrated attack like that to, you know, the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of nodes on the internet that are out there. That's just, you know, that DDoS attacks usually work by taking big groups of computers that have been, you know, infected with viruses and then forcing those all to communicate their traffic at one central computer.
Okay, question. I mean, you're obviously a very intelligent person. And you understand a lot of algorithms and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an Xbox One or a 360?
No.
Okay. if you notice recently, it's not just me. We were talking about this earlier on the same UCY network.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge issue right now with computers, Xboxes, smartphones, having issues with YouTube, having issues with Facebook, having issues with everything.
Right.
I personally went through an old school European company that I used to scan my computer. I don't use American companies to scan my computer at all. I will not use them. I will not use them. I've used the same one since I was like 13 or 14 years old. And I can go to their website and they will scan my computer and find the real problems. I scanned my computer. I started the scan over and I looked at some programs that kept trying to open. Funnier part is we actually on UCY had a conversation recently where he was talking about the same exact type of programs through Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows XP that were trying to open.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a Java that just kept trying to open. One of them was a local storm tracker, and one of them was this thing that said it was the backup system for your actual system. and we went through this and we talked about it. And I was like, you know, it's funny. I just had all these things happen on my computer, and I've had them happening for many days, which means obviously I've got something going on. But I scan my computer at least twice a month. He had the same exact problem, same exact things popping up through Windows 7, Windows 8, and XP. Three different programs, and the other person was on the air also said the same thing. So we're talking about the same exact programs that are causing the same exact problems. Now, I use Google Chrome. I go to Facebook.
Yeah, you know, there's always attacks. I mean, I recently visited like a site to look at lyrics for songs, right? And all of a sudden, I noticed that a program had been installed on my computer, and you know, I caught it right away because I can see those kinds of things.
If you understand that stat, you can watch it. But the
fact is that most devices are not very secure. There's typically you know, software development is so rapid that a lot of times there are security holes in the software that allow malicious activity to you know, compromise your computer. And of course, that makes things like Bitcoin difficult for the average user right now, because if their device is compromised, they could lose those coins. Now, on the other hand, there are mechanisms of keeping your Bitcoins in essentially in what's, you know, known as the wallet, where that data, that digital key that's used to unlock your coins, never touches a computer until you're ready to spend them. And, you know, typically it is difficult to ensure that any device you use is not compromised. But I think what we will start to see more and more of, especially as people turn to digital means of transmitting value to each other, you know, we'll see companies that implement very purpose-built devices that, you know, are really meant to keep your data secure. You can do things like sign transactions for Bitcoin with separate devices that then plug into a computer that may already be compromised. But because of the fact that all you're doing is transmitting the already signed transaction, you know, that will make it possible in the future, when this kind of technology is developed, to spend Bitcoin with confidence, even on a computer or a Xbox or an Android phone or whatever device you're using, regardless of whether it's been compromised.
Well, and the thing I'm talking about is the fact that not even just that. I mean, I've been a gamer. It's my leisure pleasure that I do for fun. I play Call of Duty games or Halo or whatever, you know, on Xbox. And I bought the NSA tool, which is very scary. The Xbox One is a very scary tool. Please do disconnect or turn around your actual connect for your Xbox One if you own one.
All right.
If you're listening to this radio show, please do. Because it's thermal, it tracks heartbeats, and it records facial recognition and voices. Please do turn around. And that sounds really scary, but you can ask Chuck and Drew. I'm really not one of those people that goes into this kind of shit, but it's mad. My brother and me both had an account, and all of a sudden my brother walks in the room and he's like, "Hey, Colby, what's going on?" And they're like, "Hey, Ducky, you're here." And I'm like, "My Xbox just said you were here." At that second, I turned my Xbox Connect for my One around, and I was like, if I could unplug it, I would. You're not allowed to.
I think something that's great about the Xbox One, though, is it gives us all a kind of a preview of the technology that's available there for, you know, government entities or whoever may be wanting to identify people and you know, use computers and those devices to track data and information. And, you know, while I personally am of the belief that it's pretty benign what's going on with the Microsoft Xbox stuff, it does demonstrate that, you know, this is all very possible. And especially with all these, you know, the revelations over the last year of the NSA spying that's been going on, you know, surveillance of pretty much all communications.
You might have missed the point with that, though. If you think about it, the NSA spying, the
I know it's all, you know, can be related for sure.
It can all be traced back to actually the original owner of Microsoft, which is a scary faction. Actually, vaccinations, GMO, chemtrails. I mean, you can dig down this wormhole, which I've done, and it's all traceable on TED Talks, even back to Bill Gates, which is really scary. I mean, even Common Core and the ACA is traced back to the same person. it's pretty scary. And then you allow them, even like I have, into your home. Well, who doesn't have Microsoft? Well, people like Chuck and Drew don't have Microsoft. They rely on Apple, which is smart in one aspect. But the problem is they're also bought off as well. So it doesn't matter who you are. You're pretty much screwed. I mean, there's a Netflix video out that is called Terms and Conditions May Comply, or May Apply, that really tells you what's going on. And it's mind-boggling. Netflix put this out, and I can't believe they haven't been shut down yet. I really cannot. Because the video pretty much tells you that, guess what? Google, Netflix, even Netflix can tell you what, can tell the government what you're doing, what you're watching, what's right. interesting and, to you.
You know, there is, because of the nature of technology being so complex, we do have to put our faith into whoever provides the hardware and software that we use, that they're not up to no good. Part of the problem with that is that there isn't really a good amount of healthy economic competition in these companies, or even they don't really come out and tell you exactly what they're doing with your data. You know, all these companies that do collect information online don't really, they're not very forthcoming with what exactly is going on. And, I hope that we'll see people become more aware of this as, but it's probably going to take some bad stories of information that somehow got out that maybe... more of the revelations like the Snowden documents and things like that. Maybe there still is more stuff coming out of that. Yeah, but over time, I think people will start to demand better from their technology providers.
There's a lot of really 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 smart people that are involved in Bitcoin, and I'm not too worried about how things are going to turn out that way, because it's going to take a bunch of really really smart people to get around the barriers that they've established with their programs.
Yeah, and the thing
and
about...
If there's somebody out there like Bill Gates who has this huge empire of whatever, and he's trying to keep, make Bitcoin somehow give him information and things, and people don't like it, he is going to be history. The market will change in an instant. This is not something that you're tied to them forever. There's a few people that found out what happens when you do that at Mt. Gox. So I'm not so worried about that in terms of Bitcoin.
We've kind of seen that. We've seen people that kind of infiltrated and they kind of fucked things up for a little while. Sorry for my language.
But
they did for a little while, but things got fixed because it's a free market basis.
Here's what's happening right now, though, in Bitcoin. And this is, I don't want to get too far off the track of what we were trying to present tonight, because it was interesting what you guys were talking about, so I just kind of let it go. I listened. It was good. But we're trying to talk about, this is going to be a thing that changes the way we live. And this is going to be like the printing press.
Right, it's really a revolutionary idea. And it's something that is, it's open source, completely open, which means that, unlike a lot of the devices that you use where you don't know exactly what's going on in the software, with Bitcoin, as long as you know how to read code, and if you take the time, you could educate yourself to do that. But you know exactly what the network is doing, and you know what it's not doing. And your devices may have things that you don't know what's going on with, but closed source software that you don't know what's happening with. But there's a lot of very very smart people, a lot, like hundreds of thousands now, who are getting involved in the Bitcoin space, and they see the opportunity for economic freedom that really doesn't exist under our current paradigm.
Yeah, look at the printing press for just a second, though, too. Look, when the printing press was established, they could the first thing they wanted to print were Bibles, but they also started to be able to print books. I mean, people could write and have their things published. Before, if you wanted to have something published, a scribe had to hand copy it. Well, that job disappeared with the printing press. There was no more scribes. They were gone.
Yeah. And scribes there were hundreds of scribes or thousands. I mean, it took so many people to
They would write everything on scrolls.
Right.
And then suddenly they had bound books.
Yeah, and it changed things so quickly, because it increased the the value proposition for publishers who wanted to put out work because it was much, much cheaper to produce books. Just so, and that's, you know, I think what you're tying that into is with Bitcoin, it makes it much, much cheaper for a lot of people in the financial services, you know, in the current financial services industry. It's so tied in, I think, to the existing paradigm that they don't want something necessarily, or maybe they can't grasp something as revolutionary as this. But the fact is that it does bring a great deal of value to transacting instantaneously throughout the whole world, and that value is very disruptive and will displace, just like you say, the scribes to the printing press.
Yeah, the printing press is what led to the Renaissance. The Renaissance wouldn't have happened without the printing press. And that was just a huge jump forward for mankind, for our civilization. And there were some nations that didn't accept the printing press. The Ottoman Empire, they banned it. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of the end of the Ottoman Empire. They were ahead of everybody in the world at the time the printing press was invented. And they did not want people putting out, what they call it, just heretical dogma or publications. They wanted everything that they wanted to control everything that was published,
right.
And they thought that this would disrupt that control, so they banned it. Well, what happened is they fell behind the rest of the world in technology. The rest of the world was starting to move faster, and they were still going at that plodding race. It's like, and so they fell behind, and that their empire started to disintegrate, and it took a couple hundred years, but eventually, we talked about this on one of our first shows about the Battle of Shipka Pass in Bulgaria, where the Russians and the Bulgarians got together and they drove the Turks back into the Ottomans back into Turkey. And that was the end. I mean, they pretty much occupied the entire Balkans. They occupied Greece. They occupied what is now all the formerly. The nations that made up the former Yugoslavia, they occupied Bulgaria and Romania, parts of Slovakia, I believe, Moldavia, and part of Ukraine. And they really had a huge...
Topic. Please don't do it.
Okay. They really had a huge empire. And because of this, because they turned their back on this new technology, they lost it all.
Right, they fell behind, just like countries today who maybe, you know, fiercely regulate the internet are you know, slowly starting to fall behind. The internet was kind of a modern day printing press, but that's exactly what Bitcoin is, exactly like the internet, in that it's a platform for economic activity or all kinds of activity. And it may rely on the internet, but it in itself is a platform, just like the printing press was a platform for distributing information.
A friend that I game with in London who had like a half or, you know, 4/10 of a Bitcoin, and I told him when it hit 1400 back in the day, a little while back, and he was like, "Are you kidding me?" Mm-hmm. He's like, "I thought Bitcoin died. I had that Bitcoin portion, and I just left it alone." I was like, "You don't understand, dude. Bitcoin's coming up.
It's coming up.
It's like the gold market, only it's not controlled."
Right. Well, there is a lot of. I mean, it's not necessarily controlled, but because it's such a new and unregulated environment, there is a lot of manipulation and games that are played in the price of Bitcoin, and I think that's what results in the price activity that we've seen over the last 4 years, where, you know, essentially you have maybe 2 or 3 months of really rapid growth, and then the rest of the year, Bitcoin is either in steady decline or kind of, you know, just hovering around a particular price point. But that's largely it's due to so many factors of, you know, investors who are looking to make a quick buck or whatever else. But the fact is that the general growth line has been trending at really rates in growth that I don't think we've ever seen in any kind of asset in our lives, and we probably never will see again. It's
right.
Probably the biggest, fastest growing asset that we'll ever see. And that's just because of its how universal the concept of money is and how much utility it brings to the world of money.
See, and I personally haven't invested in this yet, but I've been looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. I'm not an investor. That's not what I do.
Right.
You know, I build guns. I buy ammo. I build ammo. You know, that's my life. You know, I've got kids. I've got a lot of things going on. But at the same time, I've looked at Bitcoin and seen how it's progressed and seen that it's a profitable margin if you invest in it. I mean, yeah. it's not going anywhere. It's still there. And there's other companies.
And if we actually were
technically responsible about it, the best thing to do would be to involve this in the gun community. I mean, there's some people that believe in rights.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in the gun community. I know that there are a lot of websites online that will sell firearms for Bitcoin and ammunition and all that stuff. So there are some people who are starting to wake up to it. But again, I think it's one of the things that with Bitcoin, you really ought to understand at a base level. Not, you know, you don't have to understand the cryptography and all the complex math behind it and how everything works, but you do have to understand some core basics like the concept of having a private key, and that key is, you know, if anybody else has a copy of that key, the key is just a piece of digital information. It's just like, you know, any file that you'd store on your computer.
It's a more complex form of a barcode that you'd scan on something in a store.
Right. Or you can actually store a Bitcoin private key in the form of a QR code, which is one of those square boxy looking codes that you can scan with your cell phone. But it's really just a piece of data. And that piece of data is a unique key. It's so unique that, you know, nobody else will ever, take a computer till the end of time to reproduce that key and determine that it, you know, belonged to the corresponding Bitcoins. But, understanding some basics about how Bitcoin works is really important before you invest, because otherwise you're more than likely you're going to have some trouble where you might, you can still, if it wasn't possible to steal Bitcoins, it wouldn't have any value, just like anything else. You know, it's very important that, excuse me a second. It's very important to know what you're doing with it in the first place.
Yeah, now, I'd like to also keep going back to some history of things that changed the way the world works. The invention of the automobile changed the way the world worked. And prior to the car, half of the land in the United States that was under cultivation to feed horses. When the car came along, there's a lot of that land no longer was needed for cultivation, has been returned to the wild. There's actually it's not quite 50% of what was under cultivation, because there's a larger population now, but it's about 30 to 40% of what was under cultivation at the turn of the century, 1900, is now not under cultivation. It was marginal land. It wasn't that profitable to farm on it. So it's either places where they let animals graze, or it's just whatever. But that was because of the automobile. And there were a lot of people that thought cars were not, there. Oh, if you want to get from point A to point B, you better not depend on a car, because it's not always going to get you there. A horse is going to be what you need to have. And they just refused to do anything about that. Mm-hmm. But the car eventually became what it is. Now, this wasn't just people, individuals making these decisions. There were large companies at that time. Almost all the commerce, the retail business, was done by mail order. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy working for Sears and Roebuck, who was the largest retailer in the United States at that time, and his last name was Penny, J.C. Penny, and he was working for him. He came to them with this idea that, hey, this car is going to be the new big thing, and what we want to do is we want to buy the land at all the intersections and major highways, and we want to build stores there eventually. But we're going to, as the car comes into more and more production, more and more people have them, they're going to want to drive someplace, and this is where they're going to drive. They're going to drive to those stores and go shopping, and they laughed at him, and so he quit and started his own company. And J.C. Penney eventually became a bigger retailer than Sears and Roebuck, because the guy could see that this was going to change the way people do things. Bitcoin is the same kind of invention. It's going to change the way people do things. And you can be Sears and Roebuck, or you can be J.C. Penney. It's your choice. I mean, Sears and Roebuck are still in business. They're still doing business. I mean, they didn't go out of business, unlike the Ottomans. But the people, and J.C. Penney has been passed up because there's been new ways of doing business that have, you know, like the Costco model and the big box stores, and they've kind of really cut into the business of the mall stores and the store at every intersection. But things change. And this is a change that's happening. It's going to change the way we live. We owe it to our audience. That's one of the things we try and do is we try and bring new information to you guys to let you know what's happening and how it's going to impact your life. And Bitcoin is going to have, it's not just going to be about using it as money and buying and selling stuff. There's a lot of applications. There's a lot of other applications that are being developed or have been already developed to use with Bitcoin. It can be used for title because the blockchain is it doesn't change. It's an absolute verification of a transaction. You don't need a title insurance. It's right there.
Right, yeah, you can publish things to, essentially you could publish a document and then sign it and use that key and publish that key to the blockchain and then, you know, we'll see things like this where essentially certificates of title can be turned into applications that are run on computers and the blockchain can be the technology supporting all of it that ensures in a public fashion, because the blockchain is a public ledger, but it basically publishes to this public ledger transfer of ownership and things like that. And that, you know, right now transfer of ownership doing things like escrow is a fairly expensive job. You know, you hire somebody, you pay somebody a lot of money to do that. But you know, this is one of the potentially many applications, one of the few that's been actually thought up so far that could be tied into Bitcoin. But there are already companies that are starting to put this into action. And there's you know, new companies starting up every day that are starting to get a lot of funding too. Like there's, I think another relevant point to throw in here is that, you know, like last year, I think that the number was somewhere around $120 million were invested into startups in the Bitcoin space. And these are all companies that are doing nothing but servicing Bitcoin related things, whether that is, you know, being wallet providers for people to store their Bitcoins in a way that's easy to use, where they don't have to worry about security other than their login, you know, where they choose to use somebody else to store their coins rather than, you can also do it completely independently of any third party if you educate yourself on how to do it, but
these, it isn't that complicated.
It's really not, and there's a lot of software that makes it much easier too. It can be a little daunting, I think, for people who aren't very computer savvy. But if you can use an Android or an iPhone type device, and you know, Apple, there's another thing. Apple just recently revised their terms of service to include language that actually does permit virtual currencies for the first time. You know, there's been a lot of news about how Apple banned a lot of applications that were working in Bitcoin last year, or late last year, or early this year. But that was just because, you know, Apple is much more so than Android. They've always, you know, Apple was always this way back in the early PC days, where the PC was a very open platform. Apple's a very closed platform. It's the same thing today with Android versus Apple iOS. Apple's a much more closed platform where they have to pretty much approve everything that happens. And so early on, they were pretty skeptical because the legal aspects of Bitcoin are still kind of being worked out by governments. You know, they can't decide whether it's a currency or an asset. They don't know. You know, there isn't really any law because it is really a brand new thing that there's never been any precedent for in the past. And because Apple really tries to follow the law and all these things as closely as possible, and it's a closed platform, they shut it off pretty early. But that's starting to come back. Apple's actually changed their terms of service, and applications are starting to show up on the Apple platform for the first time. Again, and they will allow people to essentially do all their, you know, Bitcoin transactions on those devices.
Okay, one of the new products that's coming out on the market, and I don't know very much about this. I'm hoping that you do. We didn't talk about this in our meeting yesterday, but the Dark Coin or Dark Wallet is the guy. One of the developers is the guy that did the 3D printing of the gun.
Right. Yeah. I've heard some about this, and I think he actually just recently took over that project, and I think he even changed the name. I think Dark Wallet was the name of the original implementation that didn't really take off, and I think this guy who's doing the 3D printing has I might be wrong here, but this is just from memory what I remember about it. But he's essentially taking it and changing the name, trying to give it a slightly better image. But effectively, what they're trying to do is to provide better financial privacy. So, like right now, with Bitcoin, every transaction that ever happens on the Bitcoin network is completely public. And now, while the addresses that you use don't reveal your identity, when you do a credit card transaction, you have to give your name, your address, all that stuff. So, credit card transactions are completely out in the open. Anybody who you deal with knows exactly what you're buying or whatever's going on to that effect. But with Bitcoin, you use a kind of a pseudonymous address. It's a pseudonym, essentially. It's not totally anonymous. But I think with Dark Wallet, they're trying to create the potential for a more anonymous payment network. And realistically, there are some things that you want to be able to transact with where you don't, leaving a paper trail is not really of interest, and there's perfectly legal reasons why you may not want to leave a paper trail in all of your financial transactions. Whether it's just for privacy's sake or whatever. But it comes down to this thing, but
I help other people build guns on a daily basis. I mean, I teach people to build guns instead of actually doing it for them. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different thing. So you buy your lower in your name, or you buy an 80%er, and I show you how to actually mill it out, doesn't matter. It's your perspective. But technically, there's still a paper trail, like you're saying. There's always a paper trail. Because I'm searching these things, and then the people that live next door to me that see what I build want the same thing I built. Mm-hmm. So they go and order these things, and I do it on my computer, so the paper trail is where? Me.
Right. Yeah, and whether or not that's always, I think that most of the financial world has kind of been swept into this thing where the government feels like they need to have 100% of all information of how people spend their money and what they're doing with it, because they see it as an easy opportunity to catch criminals in the act of doing something wrong. Most criminal activities are associated with money in some shape or form because money's, I guess it's what makes the world go round. But rather than actually busting the criminals for the crime, they're using the financial tools as an easy means to find that. It's like how they got Capone was through his IRS, his evasion of paying taxes, rather than any of the actual criminal activity he was doing with making the moonshine and that kind of thing. So, but that's kind of a precedent that we've. I've heard stories that was very much tied into that was IRS. It was almost a ploy to get people to be more comfortable with we brought down this big criminal and we were able to do it because we got after his financial records, and maybe that was an attempt to make people a little bit more comfortable with the government snooping through your finances so that you could so that they could perhaps find criminal activity. But in reality, Bitcoin does leave a trail, enough of a trail that law enforcement, if you are doing illegal activities, and I think that law enforcement should have tools to stop people from doing things illegal. I mean, you don't want to have criminals running around extorting people or doing bad things and without having there be a chance to get caught. So there is a mixed thing there with the dark wallet. There is definitely a legitimate reason for privacy, but there is also a need for law enforcement to be able to stop people from doing bad things to other people. So, how we feel about that, but that's
no,
there's truth to that. So
there's a lot of things that we want to keep secret and private, and there's going to be availability to do that. Certainly communications, let's say you can communicate like you do on the internet, like on an email, except that the NSA is not going to be able to read it. Mm-hmm. How about that? That's going to be possible with the technology that's being developed through Bitcoin.
And it's not only through, Bitcoin is an implementation of that, cryptography and encryption.
Do you guys want to actually listen to something for a second? I've been on 3 UCY shows tonight, and now my internet doesn't work. I'm talking to you over my cell tower.
Huh. Wow. So you're getting jammed? Or your computer fried?
It's no, not my computer. I mean, we're talking my wireless router is red, and I have no internet connection at my house.
Oh.
I'm only running with you guys off my phone. That's it.
That's amazing, actually. I mean, it's kind of we're gonna have to get the all the technical issues worked out and get you and Drew with new routers.
Well, I was blocked out of the chat for the first half of the show, and
it has nothing to do with my router. Actually, it's the seriousness is I was on three shows before you guys even came in and talked to me on Skype, and I was on with Dave. I was on before that in three different shows.
Colby, I'll have a chat with the guys at the NSA because we are sponsored by them. And I'll make sure you just have a clearance because you're new.
All right. Well, I don't want to run us out of time here, but I've kind of made my points about historically what's happened to the people that, you know, just tried to resist change. Is it kind of things just didn't wait for them. They passed them by. So I'm not saying you have to do this. And certainly I wouldn't recommend doing it with money that you might need next month. Cause, you should start with small amounts and learn how to use it. Maybe, if you know somebody in town that accepts Bitcoin, maybe it's a restaurant or something, you'd put enough in there that you could use it to buy your dinner there and take your wife out to lunch or to dinner and use the Bitcoin to pay for it and see how it works and start to use it in that manner so that you understand it a little bit better and so you have a little more confidence in it and you realize that it does work like money.
Yeah, I think that's really the important part of it is, you know, if you do study Bitcoin and you do find that it does offer benefits, which, you know, a lot of merchants in particular are starting to see that they can save money. That's one big application of it so far is that a lot of people who accept payments online, Overstock.com, this beginning of this year, started accepting Bitcoins for everything that they sell. Same with Tiger Direct. And these companies are starting, and now just recently, I think the last week or two, Expedia.com announced that they will accept Bitcoin for hotel bookings. So, you know, there's a lot of really big companies that are starting to see the value proposition of this. And, you know, if as a consumer or as just a regular person, if you start to see that Bitcoin could offer advantages, then, you know, start to get to know how it works. You know, find some applications that will allow you to do Bitcoin transactions. I wouldn't do any large amount of money until you're comfortable with securing that money because nobody wants, you know, it would leave a very bad taste in anybody's mouth to invest a lot of money and then lose it all because they don't know how to keep it secure. So, you know,
or they go to tip the guy and they tip him a full Bitcoin instead of a hundredth of a Bitcoin or something.
Right.
Right, so generous tip.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things that, you know, and this is very new, and it's going to take some time, just like it took time for people to be comfortable going from the horse to the automobile. It's going to take time for people to be comfortable going from payment systems that they're used to. But it also took time for things like the credit card to become accepted as it was.
And this is going to make credit cards obsolete.
Very much so, because the value proposition is so much more superior. What I was saying with the merchants is that they can save a large amount of their fees. The credit card companies will typically charge a merchant anywhere from 3% to as high as maybe 9% per transaction, you know, of the whole cost of the transaction, and that's a lot of money for merchants who choose to accept credit cards, which, you know, you almost can't do business without accepting a credit card these days. Just, you know, being able to do electronic payments like that. Now, with Bitcoin, if you're large enough to actually accept it directly, you could actually get away with almost with essentially zero fees. Most companies are going to have a hard time doing it directly because it does take a lot of tech savvy to be able to do that. But there's companies, two already, that are very big here in the United States. One is BitPay out of Atlanta, and the other is Coinbase out of San Francisco. And both of these companies will allow any company or individual to create a merchant account and accept Bitcoin payments. And they will actually, you can choose the amount of that transaction that you want to save in Bitcoin. So when somebody pays you, you can either hold all of it as Bitcoin, or you can hold some of it as Bitcoin and have the other amount immediately converted into the US dollar, which is then deposited into your bank account the next day. And you know, you can do a sliding scale of whatever percentage you as a business think that you want to store in Bitcoin. You could do 100% in US dollars, you could do 100% in Bitcoin, but this company acts as a payment processor who makes, you know, it makes the job of accepting Bitcoin pretty much trivial for anybody who wants to. All you need is a computer or a tablet.
Sort of be technical, what you're saying is that if there are people out there that want to actually help promote Bitcoin, they can go to their local grocery stores, their local bodegas, whatever the hell you call them, your corner store, and say, hey, accept this.
And they can create these accounts at these companies, BitPay or Coinbase. And these companies, unlike MasterCard and Visa and American Express, who charge, you know, 3 to 9% or higher, all these companies charge 1% or less. So, you know, they're already demonstrating the value proposition of Bitcoin, and that they're already able to offer rates far superior to these big payment processors. And this is with a very, very small, you know, the amount of market awareness that Bitcoin has is still very small compared to everything else. And the entire market cap of the entire Bitcoin network is, I believe, just under $10 billion, which that's a lot of money to an individual. But as far as big business goes, that's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. And one of the things we still have a few minutes left. You're about 13 minutes left in the show. And I want to leave some time for summary, but I want to make a couple points, economic points, and everybody try and stay awake during the economics part of this. In economics, when something has usefulness, we call it utility. I don't know why, but that's just what they do. That's how they talk. And the utility of, as more and more people begin to accept Bitcoin for transactions, for voluntary exchanges, the utility of Bitcoin grows. And the utility has been growing, I would say, over the last 2 years, it's been growing faster than Bitcoins are being mined by all the miners that are out there creating Bitcoins by solving these blockchain math problems. So if the demand for Bitcoins is increasing because there's more, the utility is growing, there's more people using it, and the supply isn't keeping up with that, what has to happen to the value of the Bitcoin? It has to go up. And it is. Now, sometimes it goes up faster than it should, and it drops back down, but it never drops back down and sets new lows. It's always setting a higher low, so that the overall long-term trend is still up. And as Sam and I were discussing yesterday, it's kind of an exponential growth. And it's hard when you're in the middle of the part where it hasn't quite turned completely and gone almost straight up, when you haven't got quite to that point yet. It's hard to recognize that that's the kind of growth that you're having. But what other kinds of investments have gone up 50% in the last 2 months? I can't think of any. Stock market is just it's a disaster. It's a bubble, and it's waiting to pop. It's a disaster waiting to happen. Gold and silver should shoot up in time, but they're being manipulated down because the markets are rigged. And so I'm kind of wary about putting too much money in there. Bitcoin, I think, is one thing where there's no regulation, there's no manipulation. You actually have almost a true market. Now, that's a little volatile, and like I said before, I wouldn't go in there and put grocery money into this expecting to get rich. Put money that you can afford to lose, money that you don't need, and you can buy it in small as a hundredth of a Bitcoin at a time, or even smaller than that. But you don't have to. You don't have to buy one Bitcoin at a time. I just had a little extra money this month, so I bought a quarter of a Bitcoin. You know, that's how you accumulate it, and it's probably going to go up quite a ways for quite a while, and it's a really good place to store your wealth. That's what I had to say in summary of that.
I think there's really one of two futures for Bitcoin, and that is either somehow it will be superseded by some technology that nobody can predict. But for that to happen, a lot of things would have to happen, because Bitcoin could always essentially incorporate any brilliant ideas. That's the brilliance of it being open source, is that any good ideas that happen, because Bitcoin is the most widespread of these, and you know, and people are very active in its development, it could always implement those types of features. You know, unless people all of a sudden decide that, oh wait, we do like central banks pulling the levers of our economic activity, and you know, but we're not seeing that. You know, people are fleeing the dollar, people are fleeing the euro, because you know, increasingly they're not sound forms of money, and I think people start to realize over generations of being essentially screwed by poor money management, that there needs to be an out, and Bitcoin is sound money, much like gold and silver, in that it's scarce and there isn't some central authority monkeying with your value, you know, with the value of what you hold. Instead, it's a totally voluntary system where you know, people, it essentially has wealth because people or it has value because people decide it has value, and they can see the utility in it. That's exactly what it was built for in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And that's so, this is the first real money that's ever emerged without being a commodity first. That's right. been a real money that actually had a value, and the value is found in the utility of the coin, not as the commodity that they convert to money. Mm-hmm. And so they tried to copy all the process or all the requirements of or the properties that real money had, right, into the Bitcoin, so it couldn't be counterfeited like fiat currencies are, and mm-hmm. all this, and it's so far gone according to plan. Yeah, I have one other story to leave with you guys. Sure. This is a fast one. Back in the 80s, we had a junior businessman's club, and we'd meet for lunch once a week, and one of the guys in the group was, he was really involved with computers. And computers at that time, we were going from mainframes to kind of a, they certainly were not at the home computer yet. We were kind of talking about like a computer. If you're going to buy one, you'd need a room and some air conditioning in it and everything. It would be a big unit to run all the stuff you do. It'd be kind of like a mini mainframe or something. And this guy was involved with doing that for Harry and David, which is located here in the Medford area. And he was telling us about this new company that had the rights to the operating. He had written the new operating system for Xerox, or for, excuse me, IBM. For IBM, this was the old the operating system for that, the DOS. And this new company is called Microsoft. Has written this source code for it, and I guess because of antitrust laws, IBM couldn't own the source code, so they gave it to Microsoft to do this. And this guy, Bill Gates or whatever his name was starting this company, and he said this is going public, and you can buy stock in this. And I had a chance to buy a block of stock for $1,000 at Microsoft. Today would be worth over $10 million. And I said, I don't know if it's $1,000. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm telling you guys,
yeah.
Bitcoin is a huge opportunity. Don't just listen to me. Go do your own research. Do your own reading. Learn about. Spend your free time learning about Bitcoin. Maybe you'll decide you don't want to do it. But man, don't just pass it by and say, oh, it's something that it isn't. You don't understand it, so you're not going to do it, because this is really an opportunity.
Definitely. Definitely. It's either going to go through the stratosphere and we can't even predict how high the price will go, or it will go to zero. But it's definitely worth, you know, the fact that it's stuck around for 5 years and it only grows stronger over time. There's a property that people associate with Bitcoin in that it, there's a book that a philosopher wrote recently about anti-fragility, things that are anti-fragile, which essentially means that when they are challenged, rather than break apart, they become, instead, anti-fragile means that they become stronger. And that's, you know, Bitcoin has shown many of the traits of an anti-fragile entity, in that every time Bitcoin has been challenged, rather than become weaker or fall apart, it's actually grown stronger. And you know, that's the nature of it so far. And again, like you're saying, Chuck, that you know, you have an amazing opportunity now to invest in something that could very well, you know, change the world in a lot of great ways.
Yes, and I don't see, as more and more people get involved, and I don't see the demand getting smaller. I just don't see that happening. And the demand is growing faster than the supply. The supply is more linear. actually, if it's almost its acceleration is declining on the
right. The supply will is by design. The supply essentially is like a reverse parabola. The supply initially starts very steep, and then eventually there will be no new supply. But that is
now we're about the halfway mark on the supply.
That's right. It was designed so that the first 4 years, half of all bitcoins that would ever be created were created in the first 4 years. The next 4 years, a quarter of all coins that will ever be created,
and that's then half of the next half.
Yeah, and then half of the next half, and half of the next half. So essentially, 20 years from now, very, very few bitcoins will be created. But that process will continue, although very slowly, for at least another 100 years.
And more people are going to want the bitcoins because it's going to be how you do business.
Right. Because
and so the value is going to soar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think some very smart people have predicted Bitcoin prices anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million or higher in the future. And I think that's possible. And it's certainly possible that the value could plunge to zero if something better were to replace it. But when something new and amazing like this comes along, it doesn't happen all the time, you know.
And I'm sure something will. I mean, it'll be like JCPenney was. They were kings for a while, and somebody else has deposed them. They're not. They're kind of on the rocks right now. And you know, the Costcos and the WalMarts are taking the market share.
Right, but they stuck around for at least a good 100 years, and that's the same is true about the same is true about reserve currencies. Throughout the last 6 or 7 centuries, various different countries or kings and monarchs have controlled the reserve currency, and it just so happens that right now the United States is the current crown of the reserve currency of the world with our dollar, but it's been about 100 and. Maybe a little over 100 years. And
they actually started right after World War II, so it's been about 70 years.
Yeah, where it's been the true reserve currency. But it's still, that's,
they were a player for that, but they weren't, I think it was, I'm not sure what was going on in World War II. And the last thing we have is precious metals. I think a lot of the precious metals have been stolen. The gold, I don't think there's any gold in Fort Knox. Somebody has it, and we're not going to be able to get it. You can still purchase gold out there, but it's getting harder and harder, and there's a huge premium you pay above the spot price. So I don't know if that's going to be available at a price that we can afford.
And I do think that gold is a great sound money. The only problem with it is that most, to actually transact with gold, you can't send gold through the internet. It's very expensive to store and hold. And most people who do think they possess gold are really just possessing paper certificates for people. It's an IOU for gold. And, when they come to collect that IOU, if everybody comes to collect it at the same time, they could very well find themselves holding an empty bag.
Right. It's like been fractional reserved.
Mm-hmm. And with Bitcoin, the nice unique thing about it is that anybody can see that yes, in fact, they do have their Bitcoin as long as they have an internet connection and a computer, which is pretty much ubiquitous in our modern lives.
Right.
You can ensure that yes, in fact, the Bitcoins that you think you have are still really there.
Well, the music's gonna start any second now, and thank you so much, Sam. This has been an awesome 1 hour discussion.
And yeah, thank you.
This is one, if you guys want to review this and listen to some of this, it's going to be up on the podcast and the YouTube channel right away. As soon as the show's over, as soon as I got them done, we're going to put them on our Facebook page. Review this show. This is something that's really important. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Good night.